This week's show with the Needlepoint Dads is sponsored by CyberPointers. CyberPointers is 15 years old and is the only online chapter of the American Needlepoint Guild. Membership is open to all ANG members. Meetings are conducted every other month and are run completely online via an email groups IO program. They have an instructor-led program every meeting and love to see photos of member projects. Upcoming meeting programs include Earth Spiral by Terry Bay, Fibonacci Swirls by Olivia Hartshorn, led by chapter member Kathleen Brennan, Stash Sampler by Melita Glavin, and Stars and Stripes by Jenny Walter. Several workshops are planned for the 2024-2025 calendar, including designs from national teachers Kathy Reese, Gail Stafford, Don Donnelly, and Tony Gertis. Be sure to check out CyberPointers' website at cyberpointers.org or contact a CyberPointers board member for all of our exciting current and future offerings. CyberPointers would also like to thank FiberTalk for providing listeners the opportunity to learn about new designers and techniques. We look forward to sponsoring future shows in 2024. And I would say thanks to CyberPointers for sponsoring FiberTalk shows, and it's a pleasure working with the group. And now, on to our conversation with the Needlepoint Dads, Harvey Kravis and Dan Blackwelder. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. Our artists this week are the Needlepoint Dads, Harvey Kravis. Harvey, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Gary. Pleasure to be here.
Good to have you. And Dan Blackwelder. Dan, hi.
Hello to you guys. This is a very unique opportunity. Thank you.
This is fun. All male, an all male needlework show. Can't beat that.
All right.
But we will mention one female, and that's Jane Wood of the Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure blog. Jane, very instrumental in helping us, helping make this happen and providing some background information. So thanks to Jane. And I don't care what your needlework interests are, but particularly needlepoint, if you're not following the Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure, you're missing out. It is a great resource, and Jane just does a fantastic job of providing news and information for needleworkers. It's really good. So look that up and bookmark it and follow it, because Jane, she'd been doing it a long time and just does a tremendous job. So thanks to Jane, not only for helping put this together, but just ongoing, just being a tremendous resource. Yep. I really admire her. We have to get the background in first. So, Dan, I am most fascinated. You grew up in North Carolina around the textile mills, so your exposure to needlework or textiles, basically, is through that, and you started with weaving. I'm just fascinated by that. I mean, weaving to the point where you're doing art and selling fabrics. How do you even attach yourself to that?
Well, I mean, the background as far as where I grew up and was in North Carolina in a very small town. And, you know, the textile industry was huge in the South then, not so much now. But they were, in my town, they were yarn mills. They actually produced yarn from cotton and other fibers. They didn't actually produce the fabric.
Yeah.
So even my grandfather owned one of the textile mills in our town, a small one. But I didn't have much to do with them, but I guess just through osmosis, maybe, I don't know. But later in life, I did take up weaving because it just looked like an interesting thing to do. So I got the loom and I kind of went at it full force. And I did do some art pieces, I guess you could call them, for Bank of America and a few other galleries. But I really like doing yardage. I like doing fabric that could be used. So I did this fabric for a particular chair that Gump's department store, if you're familiar with Gump's in San Francisco, they sold. And I made my own pillows for that chair. And people liked it so much, I showed samples to the interior design department at Gumps, and they took me on to do custom pillows for that particular chair. That lasted a few years, actually, and very rewarding. I like sort of churning it out.
Yeah.
You know, and then from that, then I segued to needlepoint later.
Yeah. We've talked to a handful of weavers, and that whole loom thing can really get out of control. I mean, we've talked to a couple where they have basically a small building to hold all their looms. How far down the rabbit hole did you go?
Well, not that far. I just had a nice loom, a Leclerc loom in the basement of my house.
Okay.
A studio, if you call it. And it was a hobby for me. I mean, I didn't really think I'd turn it into something lucrative. And when I say lucrative, on the downside, I didn't get rich from it, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I just wondered, because that's an easy one to invest yourself in several looms and just have a whole factory going very quickly.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. You can get in too deep.
Yeah.
That's for sure. You know, but I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the labor of it, actually. I was a younger man then, and, I could work all day just producing yardage, which I was very, very proud of, actually.
Well, that's got to be a relaxing rhythm, weaving. There must be a rhythm to it, yeah.
Well, there's a monotony to it, I suppose, as there is a monotony to needlepoint. I remember years ago I was interviewed by a business magazine because I owned a successful business up in the wine country. And they said, if you weren't doing this job, what would you like to do? And I said, I think I would enjoy being on an assembly line doing the exact same thing over and over all day long. And he was shocked to hear that, but it was kind of the truth.
Uh-huh.
And I've had jobs in college that were incredibly monotonous, and I was really into it. So needlepoint is certainly that in a way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can let your mind go free. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So then you picked up needlepoint. How did that happen?
Well, we had a house up, as I said, up in the wine country, and some guests came up one weekend, and a guest of a guest started doing needlepoint. She pulled out her little bag of needlepoint. Of course, I was just on it, you know, immediately, and said, what is that?
Yeah.
And she taught me how to do it right, you know, within 5 minutes. She taught me the one stitch, which I still do to this day. I don't know any other stitches. I mean, on these websites and these, and hearing Harvey talk to other people, I know there's this infinite number of things you can do. I'm either too stupid or not interested. I just keep doing the same thing over and over and over like a monkey, I guess. I don't know.
That hooked you, then. Yeah, it did
hook me right away. And I did what most people do. I started buying painted canvases, and I would do it, turn it into a pillow, give it to someone. This went on for a while until, and I sort of segued toward geometric things. So then later I thought, I think I can do some on my own.
Yeah.
You know, make them up as I go. And I started that a few years ago, and I really, really enjoyed that for myself. It's just much more rewarding for me.
Yeah. And then, Harvey, you took the more traditional route. Now, see, mine was a girlfriend in college. She and her her best friend did needlepoint, and it was much like Dan described. Wait, what is this stuff? I got to see this. And then I was hooked. So, but your aunts did it to you, Harvey.
Yeah, I had a couple of aunts that were doing needlepoint, basically usually pillows, and I thought it was kind of interesting. And I was looking for something to do while I was watching TV, because I was a teenager, and this is like, you know, 50 years ago. But I was watching a lot of TV and wanted to be productive while, you know, kind of justify the TV watching. So I got a pillow, which I still have to this day. And it's like a multicolored thing. It's a normal size pillow, and it was from a kit. Got it finished and all. And then I said, I did a painted canvas that was a picture of a Chinese water carrier. It was probably about 14 inches by 18 inches, something like that. So decent size. Didn't get it framed or anything, but I had it blocked. And then I started to branch out and started to think about how I could be creative on my own. And I did this backgammon board, which is just like four or five colors. I learned a lot from that experience, because I didn't order enough yarn and I had to order more. And I learned the whole dye-lot thing the hard way. And so it's noticeable, but it's a cool piece. And it has some three-dimensional dice on it. It's fairly vibrant colors. The other mistake I made with that, or at least in my mind it was a mistake, was I put glass on it, and it wasn't museum quality glass. It was just regular glass. So it's very hard to take pictures of it. There's always a glare coming or a reflection. Not the greatest, but I thought at one point maybe I'd use it as a real board and play with it. But that ended up not being the case. So
yeah. Yeah, in the picture you sent, I felt your pain. Yep, there's just there's no way to get rid of those reflections. Nope. You can hold it at 15 different angles, and it's never going to go away. Yeah. it's so interesting, because we all basically came from the same thing, and a long time ago, but pretty much the same origins in one way or another, and yet are still doing needlework. And I know for me, it was, like I said, the girlfriend, but I struggled for a long time. Actually, I struggled till I got older and just didn't care anymore with the whole, male doing basically what's a women's hobby, sewing, as my dad would call it. I just kept it quiet. I did it because I really enjoyed it, but I just kept it quiet. And of course, family members knew, but I just always struggled with that. And it was, I don't know, 15 years ago that I finally just decided, hey, I don't care anymore. I enjoy it and I'm doing it. And did you guys have any of that, or is it just didn't bother you?
Harvey, you want to go with that?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So when I was young, and starting out with it, the question did cross my mind, is like, am I going to be ridiculed for this? Is it, right. What are other people going to think of it? And I took, Rosie Greer, as you know, was a inspiration to me for doing this, because he was this big monster of a football player, And he just came out and said, yeah, I do needlepoint on the airplanes when we're traveling from game to game. And I said, wow, if he can do it, I can do it. And that was the nail in the coffin for me to, not worry about what other people were thinking.
Yeah, Rosie was my hero. He gave justification, because if you're going to argue with a 300-pound football player, then I'm justified. Yeah.
Yeah. Named Rosie.
Right. Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah. I wonder how many male stitchers throughout the years have leaned on him as the,
a lot. I think a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Leave me alone. Rosie Greer does it. I can do it too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but now you guys, strictly needlepoint then.
What do you mean, strictly needlepoint? I mean other stitching things?
Yeah, or? You don't do other techniques.
No, I don't.
Yeah. And I don't either. In fact, it's fascinating to me, as Dan mentioned before, all the different types of stitches. And until I joined some of these Facebook groups, Needlepoint Nation in particular, I didn't even know that these things existed. I don't even know if you could classify the type of stitching that I do, because the pieces I do are large, have many, many colors. I'm constantly changing colors and threads. And I don't even think basket weave, for example, is possible in the types of, in the detailed amount of colors that I have in small spaces. It just, I have to, you know, go wherever it leads me.
Yeah. No, so. What you do is particularly the old master paintings. I mean, to me, that's no different than a full coverage cross stitch where, you have to have those small stitches to get the shading and all the little detail. There's no way you could put a Jessica stitch in there and have that work. It just wouldn't do it. So yeah, what you're doing. Yeah. You're with basket weave or tent stitch or whatever, version you use. Yeah. You're kind of right there. So Dan, you did something that fascinates me in that you went into designing your own, creating your own designs. And for a lot of people, that's a huge leap. Most people never make that leap from doing other people's work to creating designs. Was that just, you just had visions of what could be stitched and just started doing it, or?
Well, I guess so. You know, that I've been asked that a lot. And, I think I was interested in geometric pattern. So it was an easy thing. I couldn't do a picture of a flower on my own. I wouldn't know where to start. But if things are straight lines interest me, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, I don't have much in mind. Usually my things are driven by color. Mm-hmm. I might say I want something in reds, and I'll use like six different reds to achieve that. And they come out pretty well. It's interesting you brought that up because I've been doing needlepoint for a long time. I'm an older guy, and one day I thought I'm on Facebook with some of my friends, and I thought I wonder if there's a Facebook club or something. Well, how stupid am I? You know. Of course there are. There's a club for everything you can mention. Probably some of them illegal. But so I went on there and found Needlepoint Nation, and they want you to put up something. So I put up this one I call Once Around the Sun because I had just completed it. Well, and the response was, I guess, overwhelming. I didn't know what to expect. But a lot of people were fascinated with the fact that it was a free hand.
Yeah,
and so everything I've put up has been freehand, and I get lots and lots of comments about that.
Yeah, do you have formal art training? That because I mean your colors come together quite beautifully.
Well, thank you. No, I don't. No, nope. I never had an art lesson in my life.
You're one of those. Okay,
one of those. But if could I go back to something else you mentioned?
Oh, sure.
Do allow that?
Oh yeah, help yourself.
About the mail thing. Because I think part of this whole interview is because we're two guys, right?
Well, yeah.
You know, yeah. And it sounds like you were what I'd call a closet stitcher.
Yep, right? Pretty much, yep.
As a friend, you know, I've sort of lived on slightly outside the norm in society. And as a friend of mine said one time, he said, well, when you came out of the closet, you slammed the door, didn't you? And I said, yes, I guess I did, you know. So that thing, the Rosie Grier thing, I knew about Rosie Grier, but it didn't register with me very much. I just went right ahead and did what I want to do. And I would say to any man or woman, and particularly young man or woman, boys or girls, if you let that hinder you from pursuing a sport, a hobby, even a career, any kind of passion, it will not serve you well in life. You really need to do what you want to do. And those kind of prejudice shouldn't have any effect on you.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. I would agree with that. Yeah. But yeah, like for me growing up, I grew up in Michigan and, you know, my dad was a bow hunter and, you know, it was all sports and hunting and cars and all those, you know, those manly things. And for me to even mention needlework was, you know, just, yeah, closet stitcher. Yep, that's pretty much, that was me, yep.
Okay.
Yep.
There might be other closet stitchers out there. I'm asking them to come out of the closet and join us, you know.
I'm sure there's plenty of them, yeah.
No, don't you think?
Oh, I guarantee you, yep.
Well, I was asking a woman that's very involved in needlepoint. She has a company, a big company, and was asking her about they're going to reproduce some of my designs. And I said, she said, I like when a man brings me something. I said, why is that? And she said, it's the color, which I thought was an interesting answer. She said, men have a different take on color than women do. So there you can chew on that for a while.
Yeah. Have you guys gotten the look when you walked into a needlework store by yourself? That what are you doing here look?
I think so. I don't go into stores very often because I usually order most of my stuff online. Although my good friend Randy Nelson, who owns the store in Littleton, Mass, World of Stitches, is the store I would go to, and she was a great mentor to me, especially when I started getting back into the needlepoint life after a long period of not doing it. I did go into store a few weeks ago. I was on vacation somewhere, and I walked in just to see like what they had. They didn't have much. It wasn't really a needlepoint store per se, more of a you could get like DMC yarn there or something like that. But and I asked what the price was, and they did look at me a little funny, but it doesn't bother me. I don't really care.
I've had that luck several times, but hey, I'm here to put money in your tills. So
that's right.
I live in San Francisco, so people here are unshockable.
So. Yep, that's true. I was just on a trip there in October. Yeah.
Oh, really? Yep. Well, next time you come, you'll have to give me a hands up.
Well, that very well could be next year, so I will definitely get in touch. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
So Harvey, these I love the I love that you followed the path of stitching and then raising kids. So then the stitching gets set aside and then it comes back when the kids grow up. But but the work, the collaboration, if I can call it that, with your wife who over the art history and the old masters, that's got to be really fun to do. Working with your wife and developing these things.
Yeah. So. After my mid-20s and I got married I was 27 when I got married, just at our 40th anniversary last year.
Hey.
I had a 27-year gap with no needlepoint, you know. two beautiful girls, very proud of them. They're all grown up. They live near us, near in the Seattle area. I decided to take it back up again. And before I got into the reproductions, I designed another of my own things. I did a playing card, the King of Spades, and it just had like six colors. And I designed it on paper, on graph paper. And I only had to do half of it because it's symmetrical. You could actually turn the picture upside down. It looks exactly the same. And then after that, I found some software. And called Stitchcraft, and I did some small pieces with it. I did a New England Patriots logo, which was my favorite team at the time, and still now. Hard to believe the way they're performing this year.
Yeah, they have struggled, haven't they?
Yeah, but it was a good 20-year run. And then after that, my wife's sister was a fashion designer, and I started to get a little more ambitious, and I found this Picasso. It's called Woman with a Book. I saw it online, and I said, I wonder if I could do that. And I really needed convincing. I just didn't think it was possible that anyone could do anything that complicated. It had 47 colors in it. I just really needed someone to help me get over that hump of whether I could do it or not. And so I did it, and I did it in 9 months and came out great. In fact, I'm sitting right next to it right now. It's on the wall and it's beautiful. I actually saw the original out in the Norton Simon Museum out in Pasadena, California.
What was that like when you've spent so many hours recreating a painting like that, and to see the original, did it feel pretty good what you'd accomplished?
Oh, absolutely. I took selfies with it. It's actually, I didn't realize how large the original piece is. It's really quite large. It was a great feeling. And the others that I've done a Renoir and a Monet. Both of them are in the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And we lived in the Boston area for over 30 years, and we were members of the museum. And so those were the next two I did after the Picasso. I did the Renoir. It's a dance at Bougival, pretty famous. In fact, the two, that one and the Monet, La Japonaise, those two paintings are two of the most famous artworks in that whole museum, and it's a world-class museum. So they're very popular pictures, and those were great. And like you said, my wife was instrumental in helping me select them. She was going to be a docent at the Museum of Fine Arts and ended up for, well, I won't get into the reasons, but she every piece that I pick is approved by my wife.
What is that like as you're stitching them, those old master paintings like that? Do you immerse yourself in the painting? I mean, mentally, do you kind of explore the painting as you stitch along? What there's got to be more to it than just moving needle and thread.
I use a scroll frame, and so I never see the whole thing until I'm done, because I sew it to the frame. And I find that interesting. And these larger pieces, which are generally about the size of 2 feet by 3 feet, I started out using pattern 9. The Picasso and the Renoir were pattern 9, so 10. I was using 10 mesh count, and they went out of business, so I went over to Appleton Wool, and those are 13 count. So what used to take, 20 months to do the Renoir, a piece of the same size for 13 count was taking, 3 years. So the last four pieces I've done have all taken 3 years. That's 12 years on just four pieces. So it's people come, say, well, you must be really patient. And I think that's true. But to answer your question about as I'm going along, with the exception of the Kandinsky, the others, I would get some amount of pleasure from saying, oh, I did this section of it, or like I did an arm or a leg or a face, or a seashell in the case of the Birth of Venus, which is another one I'm very proud of. But the Kandinsky, I have to say, sapped the soul out of me. There's no real form to it. It's just a blotch of colors all over the place. And the previous pieces I did all had like 75-ish colors in them, which is a lot. But the Kandinsky had 87, and it was just too much. And I had to take a huge, long break after that. I think I took like an 8-month sabbatical.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. Now, in the pictures you guys sent, Dan, you don't use any scroll frame or anything. You always stitch just freehand.
I do, because I'd like to work. Most of my things I think of in terms of a pillow. That's I've never framed anything, and I think that's because I think of needlepoint, at least my needlepoint, as a piece of fabric that can be utilized. And I've always liked fine fabrics, Scalamandrei and Fortuny and all those fancy fabric houses. But I look at it, and that's one thing I like about needlepoint, and I'm sure other people would agree, is the quality of the finished product that you end up with. It looks great, it feels great, has a terrific touch and body to it. And I like that because it's going to last for quite a while.
Yeah. So the weaver never left you.
Never did. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Still
I don't
there.
think so. Yeah. I enjoy it. I mean, but like I don't know how Harvey stayed with the project that long. I mean, I start one, 2 hours later I'm going, well, when the hell is this going to be done? I'm just I want to move on to something else. He has amazing stick-to-itness, I would call it. My grandmother would call it. I know he talks about the Kandinsky, but I love the others he did. I mean, how could you not? Because I'm a big Monet fan as well. But boy, that Kandinsky jumps off the page. I can't wait to see it in the flesh.
No, I'm with you 100%. Like I say, for full coverage cross stitch people, and then people who do detailed needlepoint like Harvey does, I admire it all day long. But no, thank you. I don't.
I'm not going anywhere near that. No way.
Yeah. No, I'll applaud you all day, Harvey. But
thank you.
Yeah. No, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. Yeah. Yep. So the two of you come together through Needlepoint Nation. That just kind of from what I picked up, you just kind of took a shot to see if you might make something out of what you guys do.
Well, yeah, Harvey took the lead. He contacted me, and you know, we did this little, you know, mutual admiration back and forth, and then he proposed the idea of him charting these pieces. Now, let me tell you, I never heard of a chart. I've never seen a chart. I didn't know what one was. But I said, sure, I'm game, you know. So he's completely the cerebral part of this whole thing, which is he put it all together. He did all the detail work, all the technical work. And I hope I expressed strongly enough in the beginning that I was a complete Luddite when it comes to technology, and it would be up to him. Now, there's probably been days when he'd like to forget I said that and curse me for not knowing these things, but he's done a terrific job of putting that part of it together.
Yeah, you know, like Dan said, we were both admiring each other's work, and you know, I also noticed there were a lot of comments from people in the Facebook group like, oh, are there any charts available for this? Or I would like to do, you know, reproduce it myself. And there were just so many likes and positive feedback. I thought there might be some, you know, business case for it. And so I, like you said, I suggested that I could do this. Now, I had all of my pieces before, like all the major reproductions, were all done using the software, but I would import a digital photo and it would convert it to a pattern. So I'm not actually charting all these pieces in detail. I mean, I would start with maybe 100 colors and then pare it down by combining light colors together, because obviously the fewer the colors, the easier it is. But I never really built anything from scratch. But now with Dan's stuff, you know, he had either via pictures that online, or he's actually sent me most of his pieces. So I have them in hand. I'm actually starting from scratch, a blank canvas, and I'm counting how many stitches of ecru and how many stitches of black and how many stitches of this color blue, and painting the whole thing basically. And one of the things that makes it a little easier in some of the cases is that there is repetition. There are patterns, and I can basically copy and paste a lot of it. So that makes it go a little faster. But the simpler designs probably I can do in an hour. The harder ones take days and, you know, upwards of 16 to 20 hours probably.
Yeah. I wondered if you were able to copy and paste segments, because Dan's designs are the patterns are, they're visually dense, I don't know if that's a good description, but there's a lot going on, and you know, your eyes start to move around, and I've had fun looking at them, but so you are able to save some time by just taking chunks and repeating then.
Yes. You know, the software has you can draw shapes, certain shapes with it, like squares or circles. I haven't had to draw any circles, but mostly rectangles and stuff. And then you can use a fill, you know, fills the rectangle with a certain color. and yeah, I do a lot of copy and pasting. It makes it go a lot faster. I learned a lot as I went along since I first started doing his pieces, so I can do them quicker now.
Yeah, I'll bet the initial ones were a process.
Yeah.
Yeah. For Dan, sure. when you do those, I mean, the fact that you don't chart them out and had never heard of a chart, so you just see that visually, and it just amazes me. And so you just start stitching at some spot with a general idea and just let it come out of you.
I guess so. I like the term you just used, visually dense. I think that's appropriate to some of mine. You know, and I'm sort of mentally dense, but I think they come off pretty Dan. Well. Well, they do. They come off. So sometimes, like, I don't know if did you see the red grid and the green grid pieces that I did? That's what we called them. Those I just started, and you know, one thing just leads to another, and I don't always know how I'm going to do the whole thing, but it sort of starts to set its own pattern. And they are repetitive if you really look at them very closely. I think initially somebody looks at them, it's just sort of an overwhelming jumble of whatever. But if you look at them really closely, there's actually patterns in there that carry through on most of them. The most challenging one, I think, was called Once Around the Sun. And that's where it starts off in dark blues and segues into bright orange and red. That was hard to do. And I thought it was going to be a failure, but I stuck with it. And I ended up liking the finished product on that.
Yep, it works. You bet.
Thank you.
I enjoyed all of your stuff, but your black and white stuff, wow.
I like black and white. I don't think many women stitchers were drawn to the black and white very much.
Yeah.
Harvey and I have been trying to rethink some color approaches that I could take, and we're getting ready to post one that I really like a lot. It's simple. But the colors are kind of a deviation from what I usually do. And it's going to be called Fiesta. So it has a Mexican kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
You like it, don't you, Harvey? I think you
do. I do.
Anyway. Yeah,
I think it's good. There's some simplicity to it, but it's a nice piece. I think people
Thank
like
you.
It. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, the black and white ones, every one of them just stopped me. I just I enjoy that I guess not lack of color, but it's the contrast and the patterns then really can come out. And I just really enjoyed those.
Well, thank you. I was doing a series of lumbar pillows. You know, they're sort of more horizontal, small pillow.
Yeah,
for my dining room chairs, and I thought, well, the women black and white, then you don't have to worry about it clashing with anything down the line, you know.
Right.
You know, it's kind of interesting as I'm doing some of these charts that I this is probably not a completely accurate description, but I feel like sometimes I have a little bit of an out of body experience in terms of. I feel like I'm in Dan's brain a little bit, you know, in terms of, I say like, oh, I see what you did there. That's really good. Yeah. It's like,
oh yeah.
How did you even think of that? You know, it's a fascinating experience for me. It's fun.
Well, I know that mushrooms grow up there in that wet climate you live in. So you should be careful about that.
Okay.
You mentioned there was mention of your African inspired designs, Dan. How did those come about? Did some experience in Africa?
Or? Well, I've never been to Africa.
Okay,
you know, one of the few places I haven't been. And I thank you for mentioning those. They are among my favorites to this day. I like the way the design came together. And I can tell you briefly what that's based on. It's a part of my weaving history. I was sort of fascinated with backstrap looms. If you know what those are,
yeah,
mm-hmm. Like nomadic people tie this thing around their waist and then tie it to a tree, and they weave in a very small strip because they're nomadic people. They've got to pick it up and take it with them. So after they get enough of those strips, then they sew them together and it makes a piece of cloth. And it's a typical way that some African tribes made a finished piece of cloth. And I always thought it looked terrific because they don't particularly line up with one another the way most conventional fabric designs do.
Yeah.
So if you look at it, that's what I was thinking. A strip here, a strip there, a strip there, and I put it all together. And I tried to use colors that are sort of endemic to Africa, earthy kind of colors. And I really am very happy with the way those came out.
Yeah, they're very nice, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, the backstrap loom fascinates me because you think back in time, how did people even come up with cloth? And, innovation to just figure out some device, tie it to a tree, and, you know, we can put together some threads and make a cloth. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the first person who ate an oyster. You kind of went, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
brave people trying new things, you know.
Yeah. So, Harvey, do we offer through Needlepoint Dads your old master designs as charts too, or is that not yet on the board?
Well, there's two things holding me back there. One is a sense of pride, I guess, the fact I kind of always wanted them to be one-offs and not be reproduced.
Ah.
This way they're kind of one of a kind. Wouldn't know how to price those charts for one thing and another thing. And the other thing is that the software, which recommends the amount of yarn to use, the number of skeins to order, was not very accurate for those. And I ended up having to reorder quite a bit. And so I don't feel comfortable putting out the charts with the skein recommendations that those charts have. So it's unlikely that'll happen. I actually we talked about the backgammon piece. I did a chart for that, and we may be offering that on the site soon, or maybe in a couple of months after we run through all of Dan's stuff. So that's a thought. We might do that.
Yeah.
So there is another piece. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Talk about how you guys got your heads together and said, "Hey, Dan, you got some designs. Let me chart them." Let me chart them, and then later let's do a business? Or did you say, let's collaborate and do a business? We can sell these things.
Yeah, the latter. I said, there seems to be some demand for your work. I can chart them. I'll do all the work. You just sit back and be the creative genius. And and we'll have a 50-50 partnership. And I certainly put way more hours into it than Dan does, but we're both retired and we have the time. And for me, it's a labor of love. I love doing the charting. I'm a technical guy. I had a career in the software industry as a software developer for close to 40 years. So I was able to create the website. I may just use a website from Squarespace. And I got help from my daughter, who is a UX designer. And she helped me design the site a little bit. And it's funny, the name Needlepoint Dads came from my older daughter, who had suggested that she wanted to do some social media to, sing my praises as Needlepoint Dad. And that never really happened. So when this venture came about, I said, well, that seems like a good use of that name. So we pluralized it and came up with Needlepoint Dads.
And Dan, you just sit there and crank out the designs then.
I'm the workhorse. You know, he's the brains. He's really a smart guy, and I mean, I'm not saying just because he's on this interview. I can tell you he's really, really a smart guy. And his whole family is. I don't know what happened up there, up there in Edmonds, Washington. This bunch is pretty talented. You know, his daughters and their spouses, and I imagine the little grandson's not going to be much different.
Have you guys ever been in the same room together?
Never met. Never met.
No, we met online like in last June, maybe, I think.
Just like the whole world meets people, I suppose, you know.
Yeah.
But I look for the time. I have good friends in Seattle, and I do go up there once in a while. So it's quite likely our paths will cross. I want to make it happen.
It's a great drive. I made the drive from Seattle to San Francisco one day along the coast week. Yeah. I highly recommend it.
Yeah. Have you driven from San Francisco down to Big Sur area?
No, haven't done that one.
Put that on your bucket list. That's a spectacular part of California. It really is.
I'll do that. Yeah. Yep. So then the Needlepoint Dads then, so we have both of you with very distinct roles, and then what you offer then are the charts. So people can buy the charts, and then the charts tell you what materials you need, and then that goes to their local needlework store.
Exactly. And, you know, I hope this podcast will encourage men to jump on this and try it sometime. It's very satisfying. And as I told some friends of mine, I said, it is quite possible to do needlepoint and watch a football game at the same time. I've done it millions of times, and the world didn't end, you know.
Oh, every Sunday for me. Yep.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey.
Oh yeah.
The Niners. I've been watching the Niners. We've been doing pretty well.
Yes. Oh no. Right here in my studio room where I record and have all my stitching stuff. There's a TV right on the wall, and the scroll frame faces the wall, and yep, that we turn it on Sunday afternoon. Just let her rip all the way till 10:30 at night when the game's over. Yep.
I do the same thing. Yep. I absolutely do the same thing.
Yep. And then Monday night, I do it again. Yep.
There you go.
So yeah. Oh yeah. Yep. Baseball. Beth and I have talked numerous times about what are the best sports. Football is excellent because you can tell from the crowd noise when the next play is coming. And baseball has a kind of a rhythm. Yeah, like basketball to me is you can't really stitch to that.
It's too frantic.
Yeah. Yeah. But baseball is ideal because even with the pitch clock, there's still a lot of dead time.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. It's a big snore sometimes. Yeah.
Yep. And I found drag racing is excellent. You can get a lot of stitching done with drag racing.
Well, it's the monotony again, you know.
Right. Yeah, three-hour drag race show. There's maybe 20 minutes of actual racing, and the rest of it is just downtime. Yeah.
That's huge in North Carolina, where I'm from, you know, that racing stuff.
Right.
You know, enormous.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, some sports are good, some aren't.
Right.
And we've talked about movies. There's some movies that are really good to stitch by and others where you just can't take your eyes off the screen. And
I'm sure.
Yep. Well, you guys, this is terrific. And always glad to meet males who stitch. That's nice. Maybe that's the next Facebook group.
There you go. We're happy to start that.
Needlework men only. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, yeah. I thought it was fun that we played on the fact that it's two men doing this, you know.
Right.
Not to pat ourselves on the back or separate ourselves from all those wonderful women out there doing stitching. But I thought, well, why not? You know, and when Harvey came up with the name, I jumped right on it. I thought that's perfect.
Yeah. Well, and it's great that you've developed an outlet for your designs, because those designs should not stay hidden. So it's just a terrific contribution to the hobby in general but an art form that these are available for people to create. And when I look at your designs, there's so many, you know, the colors you choose, but people could choose any number of colors and have fun with them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you're very generous to say that, you know, and already I'm getting replies now from people who are stitching some of my designs, and they're really enjoying it. They say it's a lot of fun, and they said the chart that Harvey did is terrific, easy to follow. So that's fun to see them actually in the works now, and I look forward to seeing one of them finish that I didn't do. It'll be kind of funny to see that.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, in a number of designers we've talked to, that's one of the things that they, I think I can safely say, enjoy the most, is seeing what people do with their designs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just amazing what a design that comes out of your head, and then what someone else sees in it, and the way they interpret it. And yeah, who knows? It might even be an inspiration for another one from you. Yeah.
No, there you go. I hope so.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. In any of these things, when people post them online, and you see how they change it and change any design, and like, whoa, I would have never thought of that. And yeah,
right, yeah, right.
I think it's a big leap to go from painted canvas to charted work. It's a whole different approach to stitching, right? Because you can't just visually see, oh, I need this color on the canvas. I have to look at this chart, you know, every so often to figure out, you know, what pattern I'm stitching. And so one of our pieces, we call it BW Squares. It's our most popular, and it's free on needlepointdads.com. Is a good one. It's only two colors. It's black and white. And it's a good one for someone who wants to do their first chart, I think, because it is such a repeatable pattern, easy to follow, and only two colors. So I'd encourage people who are thinking about doing charted work to consider that. In fact, we've had a couple orders from Italy and one from France. Ah. So we're international.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool when it happens outside of the U.S., isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, nice. Also, is it okay to mention the fact that there's a company that's going to actually do mine in a kit form? They're going to have a painted canvas and the yarn.
No, you can't mention that.
Okay. Consider it not mentioned.
Okay. All right. I'm leaving all that in. Okay. Well, all right. Now tell more.
Well, it's a company here in San Francisco called Needlepoint Inc. INC. And I went down there recently because I needed something that my regular Needlepoint store didn't have. And when I walked in, as what we talked about before, they sort of look up like, what are you doing in here? You
yeah,
know,
yeah.
Kind of thing. And so I started talking to the owner, and I showed her photos. I just, you know, I had my iPad with me or my phone or something. I showed her photos, and she was all on it. And she said, would you be interested in us painting these canvases and selling them as a kit? I said, well, I need to check with the CEO up in Seattle. And so Harvey's involved in this too, if something comes of it. And they said they might have some things available in January.
Oh, that'd be great.
So it'd be fun. I'd like to see that.
So taking a charted design and then making it into a painted canvas.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So she has this woman that paints. She showed me some of the things she does, and it's kind of amazing, you know. It's it's just you got to be real careful about where the paint goes.
Right.
And you can do it, I think. So we'll see what comes of that.
Yeah, those people who paint so you can actually needlepoint and the stitches are all go in the proper holes, that's impressive work.
I know. Yeah. It is amazing, yeah.
I'd rather count them. Yeah. So then, when that happens, then that'll be available through your website too?
I think we'll put it on there that it's available from Needlepoint Inc., but we'll push it to our website.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll be different.
And then the charts that Harvey creates, those are download or print or both?
It's download. Yeah. So when they order it online, they have the option of downloading. It's a PDF, so they just download it, and they're on their own for printing it. So
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that nothing wrong with that. Yep.
Yeah.
Wrong with that.
It's a good format. I mean, it has a picture of the piece. It has a layout of all the panels that comprise the picture. So you know what order to do things, and it has all the different colors with a legend and the catalog numbers of the type of yarn, which in our case is DMC Pearl Cotton 3. But there's nothing to say you can't, you know, use the same chart on a different size mesh count. Most of Dan's work is done on 12, but I know 13 might be a little more popular. Some people may be doing it on 13. The chart still works the same way. You just get either a smaller or bigger piece, depending on what you choose. And they can certainly change the colors as well, if they want. So,
right.
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking, Harvey, you know, this canvas size, you and I have gone back and forth on all the time, and everybody seemed to think 12 is hard to get. My shop gets it for me. I don't know if they special order. But one reason I think I like it is that's the size that's comfortable for me with my eyesight and my ability. The other thing I like about it, I just realized, is it's divisible. And when you're doing geometrics, it's divisible by 2 and 3 and 4 and 6. So that I can plot something out kind of very easily using that kind of math. And it's harder to do on a 13 mesh.
Yeah, that doesn't divide well, does it?
No, it doesn't. Not at all. So, Gary, okay, I'm going to be the interviewer here.
Okay.
What kind of, man to man, what kind of things do you do? I'm just curious.
Oh, I do all of it. I'm not a fan of painted canvas, though that's what I started with.
Uh-huh.
Counted canvas is, if I do needlepoint, it's counted canvas, and I love all the stitches.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, I'll pass on basket weave, but all the other ones I do. And then, yeah, I've been doing some gold work lately, cross stitch. All of it. And I'll try any of it. I haven't done black work yet, but that's, I have a couple books and want to do that. No, I'll do it all.
Well, what kind of images do you do?
I guess most of the time it's geometrics. Geometrics are what appeal to me. I love the symmetry. And then cross stitch is primarily reproduction samplers. Just because of the history of them, and they're fun to do, mindless stitching in my mind. But I think that's what appeals to me with yours is.
It seems so. Yeah. Maybe that's more of a male thing, geometrics. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's something that could be explored. What is it that appeals to men when it comes to needlework designs? Because I know it's not the traditional urn of flowers. You know, I'll pass.
Right.
Thanks.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. What is it that? Because you're one where it was old ties.
Right.
That's old ties.
It caught my eye because I was walking through an airport one day, and it was, you know, how they have those high end men's clothing stores in airports where, oh, I forgot my suit. I need a suit quick. And they had a whole bunch of ties laid out on a board hanging on the wall in a pattern, and your work reminded me of that. All the stripes and things going different ways, and that stuff appeals to me. It's
same here.
All right, you guys, thanks. Really fascinating way you've gotten to this art form and then created this company. And, it looks like you're well underway with a whole bunch of designs and drumming up some interest. The website is Needlepoint Dads, and that's an S on the end. There's two of them, needlepointdads.com. They also have Instagram and Facebook, and, check out Chili Hollow Needlepoint Adventure too, because, Jane Wood does terrific work. Thanks to you guys. And thanks for everyone for listening.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gary. Love.